If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here inside the ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined, as always, by Finn Martin. Hey Finn, how are you?
Yeah, really good. Really good, Kenny. Absolutely tremendous. And you know the reason why.
Well, we will get into the reason why. But I mean, before we talk about wrestling, and you know, we kind of grieve the loss of the Big Show show, which has already been cancelled. However, it's not funny, everybody.
I'm devastated.
We are devastated. But if you, like us, are devastated over the loss of the Big Show show, then what about some free beer? That'll get you through it. You know, COVID.
Just the tonic
to get you through. And, you know, there's, you know, in Glasgow, there's some more lockdown restrictions that you can't go to other people's houses. So you may as well get pissed at home with some beer. And, of course, I got a cough midway through. But anyway, our pals at Beer 52, they are offering 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet for free. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/ITR and just cover the £5.95 for the postage. Beer 52 is the world's most popular beer craft discovery club with over 150,000 members, and they send a brand new case out every month. Each month has got a different theme, so there's been themes that have included beers from America and Europe and South Korea, Africa, everywhere and in between. As an independent British company, Beer 52 are passionate about the UK craft beer scene, and they continue to support it during all the madness that is going on in the real world. But if, like me, dark beers maybe not as much for you, you can choose a light option. I've had a light option. It's tremendous. And your case will come with the award-winning beer magazine Ferment and a tasty snack as well. But if you do change your mind, don't worry. You can pause or cancel your account at any time. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/ITR to get your first case of 8 beers for just £5.95 to cover the postage. That's www.beer52.com/ITR. You know, it always helps out to just kind of all this stuff, free stuff. So free beer is where we should start that.
Quite right. Absolutely. Yeah. And you can drink some of that while watching season one of the Big Show show again, knowing that there won't be season two. I mean, probably quite literally crying into your beer. The heartbreaking disappointment of the cancellation of this.
Now, apparently, there is still going to be a Christmas special. So for all of you out there who were, you know, wondering,
not lost.
How does it end? How does the story end? It continues to be as shit as it was on season one.
Big Show, I know, Big Show will be sent to OVW.
Where Al Snow can teach him how to be mediocre. I mean, this is the thing, because we did get tweets and people were letting us know as soon as they saw that the Big Show show was cancelled, they wanted to get in touch with us, because we thought, Finn, that luckily for us, we wouldn't really have to deal with the Big Show in the ring anymore, because he would be too busy sort of in the glitz and glamour of Hollywood, cutting it up on Netflix. But it seems like maybe he's going to have to come back. How are you feeling about it?
It's a clear and present danger. The threat of Big Show returning to WWE, I mean, if, you know, it could be imminent. You know, I mean, Big Show's going to have to do something to fill his time, presumably. Now he's not going to be a Netflix star for the duration of the rest of his career. So, I mean, who knows what he's going to do? I mean,
I'm going to start a petition today for a season two of the Big Show show. Let's get this man back to where he wants to be, which is in front of that camera, being cheesy for American audiences.
Exactly. Getting back to where he needs to be for the benefit of WWE and us and all of us.
And all of us. It would help us immensely. Now, there was something I was going to ask you, because I'm guessing that you have not watched, there's no way you've watched Impact from last night, right?
I have not, but I am aware that there was a major title change.
Okay, so I'm going to spoil this for people. and on what the title change is, because I thought it was worth just having a little bit of a discussion about it for a couple of minutes. So if you do not want to know who the new Impact champion is, then, fast forward by 2 minutes. So last night on Impact, Eric Young became the new Impact World Champion. He's now signed a 2-year exclusive deal. You've not seen it yet, so obviously we're kind of just speaking in broad strokes here rather than specifics. But what do you make of them making Eric Young the Impact World Champion? What is that a good message that, they're going to rehab this guy and get him back to where he was before? Is this a sign that, they've made a WWE jobber a champion? Like, where do you sit on the decision to give him the belt?
Yeah, to me, it's the right decision. I mean, Young's come back. He's energized. He's got something to prove to the world. I mean, so many of the people who've gone there from WWE, they're there to prove to the world that WWE blew it with them. And here's the reason why. And they're coming there with words, but also with actions. They've been doing some pretty stellar promos. I mean, Eric Young's been on fire on promos. Ever since he returned, he's been gearing up for this match with Eddie Edwards, who was, of course, the Impact champion. He won the belt, the vacant title at Slammiversary. So, yeah, this is absolutely the right decision. I mean, because Young's back in there. I mean, we didn't want a situation where someone's coming in, having not done well in another company, and then him, losing in his first major matchup. We've seen that in other promotions, and that basically immediately stalls a performer's potential for growth. Doesn't matter that Eric Young was anonymous, non-existent in WWE for the best part of 2 years. This is a different guy. This is a different performer. The ball and chain's been removed. Handcuffs are off. He's going out there and absolutely rocking it. I haven't seen the match, but I imagine it was really good because Eddie Edwards is really, solid. Proficient actually in the squared circle, so I have high hopes for the match. Even though, as you're right, I haven't seen it yet. It seems like the right decision to me. And Eric Young's a guy who I think is gonna do what he's never done before in wrestling. I mean, he had that run back in 2014, which really seemed like we talked about this a few weeks ago. It seemed like Impact Wrestling or TNA as it was at the time. Was attempting to capitalize on the success of Daniel Bryan's title win at WrestleMania 30. And the Eric Young thing it kind of felt a bit sad just to see Eric Young in this position where he was pushed into the title picture simply because he was an underdog and was somebody who was seen as almost like a hard luck case and somebody who was almost given the title out of pity. Or long service rather than somebody who really had earned it and it was there on merit. It was almost like an award for a guy who just stuck with TNA through thick and thin. Whereas now it's completely different. He's a raging lunatic heel. He's there to really just right the wrongs of his career in the last 2 years. He's been saying, I'm not going to be pushed aside. I'm going to be swept under the rug. I'm going to be the first choice. I'm going to be the second choice. I'm not going to be that guy that people don't notice. I'm going to be front and center. I am going to be the person that you will notice because I'm going to make you notice me. So had he failed in this shot at Eddie Edwards' Impact Wrestling title, I think that would have undone all the good work he's done since he returned at Slammiversary. So it's absolutely the right decision. I commend Impact Wrestling for going all the way on this one and doing the logical thing and giving this guy a run with the belt, a proper run with the belt this time, I'm sure he will receive. And I have total confidence in Eric Young going out there and really being a tremendous heel and working with baby faces to shine them up whilst also, bringing back some, helping restore the prestige of the Impact Wrestling title. I think Eddie Edwards has done a lot for the belt since he won it at Slammiversary, but I think Eric Young will be a guy who will elevate its prestige more. So yeah, absolutely right decision.
You're also caught up at the moment with your AEW as well. AEW got All Out coming up this Saturday night. I thought I would just quickly just run down the card and tell me if anything sticks out to you. Are there any booking decisions that you think they need to make? on the show. So here is the card. We've got a Broken Rules match, Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara. If Hardy loses, he must leave AEW. An eight-man tag with the Dark Order taking on Dustin Rhodes, QT Marshall, Matt Cardona, and Scorpio Sky. There'll be the 21-man Casino Battle Royale where the winner receives a title shot. And in that match so far are Darby Allin, Lance Archer, Brian Cage, Ricky Starks, Pentagon and Phoenix, The Butcher and the Blade, Eddie Kingston, and there's more to be announced. There is a singles match for the AEW Women's World title with Hikaru Shida against the NWA Women's Champion, Thunder Rosa. The tag titles are on the line when Omega and Paige defend against FTR. We've got the Mimosa Mayhem match, which is the match can only be won by pinfall, submission, or throwing your opponent into a tank of mimosa with Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho.
The rubber match. Between them, yes.
And then the main event is the AEW World title, where it's Jon Moxley defending against MJF, where Moxley's paradigm shift move is banned. Is there, I mean, what do you think of the card generally, and is there anything that they should do on this show, booking-wise, to kind of, you know, set them up to the next pay-per-view in November?
Well, is it official yet that the paradigm shift is banned? Has that? I wasn't sure if that was official yet. I thought that was something that we're going to work out on tonight's episode of Dynamite.
He has signed that he's willing to not do the paradigm shift. But tonight he does face MJF's lawyer in a match, and if the lawyer doesn't show up, then I think the title match doesn't happen. So,
right, okay, all right. I thought the lawyer's done a really good job. I mean, you know, he has been, I mean, oozing personality. I've been really impressed by the lawyer. So I'm looking forward to that match between Moxley and the lawyer. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. Presumably, MGF will reveal tonight that the neck brace and the walker are a ruse and that he's not really injured. I would think that that will occur on tonight's episode of Dynamite. Would you concur with that, Kenny?
You would imagine. I mean, all I can say is when I was interviewing MJF on Zoom yesterday, he did have the neck brace on for the entirety of the interview.
That's old school for you.
Now, he had that. This was not a guy who, because, you know, you get on the Zoom call before you hit record to do the interview, and then you have a little kind of debrief bit at the end, and the neck brace is on the whole time. So maybe he is injured, Finn. Maybe he is still injured. You never know. But having watched professional wrestling for as long as we have watched it, I think the odds are probably that it's a ruse.
Yeah, you would think tonight, after the match between Moxley and the lawyer, that MJF will lay a savage beating on Jon Moxley. I'm assuming that will be the outcome tonight leading to the match.
And do you think MJF should win the title, or should they have Moxley retain? Like, what do you think the decision, how should they go with this?
Ambivalent about this one. I mean, this is the match on the show I'm most looking forward to. One of the few matches on the show that I'm looking forward to be quite frank.
So, what do you think? Because the Young Bucks apparently might still be on the show. So there's still time.
Oh. Yeah, we'll talk about the Young Bucks some other time, right? So yeah, I'm looking forward to MJF versus Jon Moxley. I think I don't know whether it's time for MJF to win the title, but if he does win the title, I will have no objection to it. By the same token, if Moxley retains, I'm fine with that as well. So I don't really have a horse in the race here in terms of who I want to win. I just hope it's a good match and that MJF earns some credibility points from his performance. I think he will do, but this is the match. This is the main event. This is the match I'm most looking forward to. I'd like to see FTR capture the AWA World Tag Team title from Kenny Omega and Adam Page. I'm not really sure what's going on with Omega and Adam Page. I can't make any sense out of this storyline. So it's FTR's. FTR need to win the tag team title tonight. I mean, at least they are a cohesive unit. They're united. They've got Tully Blanchard as a manager now. You know, I think it's time to put the championship on those two. And for Omega and Page, if they're going to have the feud, I think they just need to get on with it. Otherwise, they just need to split up and do their own thing. Because this storyline has just been so inconsistent. You know, Adam Page on last week's AEW ended up costing the Young Bucks their match. The Young Bucks were in a gauntlet match. The winner of the gauntlet match would then face Omega and Page at All Out. Adam Page walked to the ring, prevented the Young Bucks from hitting one of the finishers, and then Best Friends eliminated the Young Bucks from the match. Then Best Friends went on to lose to FTR, so FTR won the Gauntlet match and they're getting the tag team title shot. So Paige sort of prevented the Young Bucks from winning, and he seemed really remorseful as he did it, didn't he, Kenny? He didn't seem like he was...
He did seem remorseful. I mean, the thing to me that's the weird part of it is that I think most people watching the show see Paige and FTR as babyfaces.
Yeah.
And see Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks as the heels.
Well, when the Young Bucks later on the show confronted Paige at the bar, they were utterly obnoxious. I mean, I know they're obnoxious anyway, but I mean, I think they were even more obnoxious than normal. And I think they were trying to be heels, but I mean, who knows with the Young Bucks. So they called Paige a drunk, and then they threw him out of the Elite. So Paige is no longer a member of the Elite.
Which is ironic, because I'm sure that, like, I know that, timing-wise, I struggle to remember exactly when things happened, but I'm sure around January, Paige left the Elite of his own accord. Because remember that happened where he'd come in and said that he just wanted to kind of concentrate on being yes. by himself and all that kind of stuff, and then Paige and Omega won the tag titles, and then it's almost like the Bucks and Omega have always just thought, no, he's still in the Elite to us. But now the Young Bucks are they've, it's like the breakup has now confirmed on both sides.
Yeah, so he's been ejected, but you're right, for a while Paige wasn't participating in Elite business. If there was a run-in, he was either not there or late arriving to assist his teammates. So yeah, that's all very bewildering, really. I mean, we had the match, I think it was 2 weeks ago, in which the Young Bucks, or maybe it was 3 weeks ago, Young Bucks and Omega faced the Dark Order, and Bucks and Omega won the match. And then after the match, Omega, for no reason, really, I mean, without any real provocation from what I could gather, especially since they just won the match over the three members of the Dark Order, he was then going to fling a member of the Dark Order on a chair. And then the Young Bucks stopped Omega from doing that. So I didn't really understand that. So the Young Bucks were kind of portrayed as baby faces there, and Omega was the heel. And that, I don't think there's been any furtherance to that story. I don't think that story has advanced since. I mean, at least not from what I've seen on Dynamite. So I don't really understand what's going on there. But to me, on last week's Dynamite, Paige, even though he cost the Young Bucks their match, he was portrayed, I think, as the babyface, and the Bucks later on were the villains. And if he's no longer a member of the Elite, how can he really coexist with Kenny Omega?
So I guess that's the drama of the match, hopefully. Because FTR and Paige have had a pretty friendly relationship, right? Dynamite, yeah. So...
So maybe, you know, maybe Paige will walk out on Omega, but it seems time for FTR to win the title to me, and for Paige and Omega to go their separate ways or have their feud. Presumably that's what will happen. So they're the two matches that I'm most looking forward to All Out. What else on the show? I mean, I've got to say that. I mean, they have had some good battle royals in the past, haven't they, AEW?
Yeah, they've kind of got the battle royal concept down pretty good. So that should be pretty exciting. They obviously I actually thought the stuff with Brian Cage and Lance Archer last week was pretty good, where they were kind of, you know, two big horses kind of facing off. But to Sondra's point, you know, the problem with Archer and Cage is that they're both quite bland, or they've been presented as quite bland. And then you've got Taz and Jake Roberts, who are the managers, and they kind of seem more like the personalities, which, you know, really you want to be focusing on the guys. So the battle royal should be pretty good. I'm really hoping that the Hikaru Shida and Thunder Rosa match is good. I've not seen a lot of Thunder Rosa. Apparently she is pretty good. And she does pretty good when she's in there with somebody who's competent at wrestling, which isn't all the time.
I mean, let's face it, AEW's women's division, you know, it could do with a boost around about now, couldn't it? You know, it could do with a helping hand. It could do with some good news.
But yeah, so I mean, we'll have a little chat about All Out next week and see what's been going on. You know, what's come out of All Out. Before we talk about SmackDown and Payback and Raw, I did want to ask you, because people will want me to bring it up. Now, Finn, you might just roll your eyes here and go, this is ridiculous. why am I having to talk about this? But Brock Lesnar is officially now a free agent, as he has been many times in the past, but he is no longer under contract to WWE. They don't have any plans to bring him back at the moment because of lack of crowds and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So inevitably it is struck of, you know, would he go to UFC? Would he go to Bellator? But well, my other question was going to be, if you were, do you think there's any, does Brock Lesnar in 2020 have enough of a pull or drawn power or move any sort of needle that AEW should even think about getting into a conversation with him, or is it, should they just leave it alone?
I mean, you know, I'd pay money to watch him against the Young Bucks. I mean, I really would.
It'd be like watching watching Brock versus the Hardys from Backlash 02.
Oh no, it would be much more ridiculous than that.
I don't know. I just have a feeling though that Brock Lesnar would not sell for one of the dives at all. Oh
my God, no, he wouldn't do. He would. It would just be a comedy show, wouldn't it? So, with Lesnar, yeah, his contract's expired. As you said, he's been in this position many times before. I mean, I think there's a comfort level now. I think WWE knows full well that he is not going to fight again. That is not going to happen. I mean, I think he's 43 now, isn't he, Lesnar? I think he was born in, was it July 77? I think he was born.
I think he is 43. Let me just check. He is, he's 43. He's turned 43 in July.
Yeah. So, he's not going to fight again. Why would he? I mean, it's just not going to happen. He's not stuck for money. He's not short of cash. This is a guy who could lend you a tenner. You know, this is a guy who's got a book in the bank. So, I mean, he's all right. He need never wrestle or do anything again if he doesn't want to. So, I imagine that Vince they'll have an understanding that they'll start talking again as we approach Royal Rumble or WrestleMania, and they'll come up with a storyline then, combined with a financial offer that is to Lesnar's liking, and he will no doubt return in time for the big shows early next year. I mean, it's understandable that he's not there now. And really, they don't need him. They could pay him all this money, but why not wait until 2021 when the crowds might be back? Presumably, they will be back. We should say, actually, on Dynamite last week, there were fans in attendance, weren't there? Did say about 10 to 15% capacity of Daly's place was there. So we're all socially distancing. So
I actually thought they added a lot to the show. I thought it was really good to have. And it actually works out quite nicely that you kind of go in between AEW and WWE. With WWE, you've got that Thunderdome, that big kind of presentation. And then in AEW, you've got some noise from the fans. So I think it's a nice combination.
Yeah, absolutely. So plus, I mean, Daly's place is outdoors. So, I mean, that reduces the risk of infection, as we all know, reduces the risk of transmission. To me, it seems like it's the Vince will just bring him back early next year. I would think he'd be back for Royal Rumble. That's my prediction. What do you think?
It's difficult because I think if you're in AEW's position, and this is obviously all just speculation, I think if they were to bring in Brock Lesnar for one big match and it was against the right person, I think it could absolutely mean something. I think the problem with dealing with Brock Lesnar is that he has done this so many times before. He did this, I think it was in March of 2015, right before WrestleMania, that he came on ESPN like 6 days before and announced he'd re-signed.
Yeah.
But everybody thought he was going to UFC.
Yes.
And then he would end up doing UFC 200 the following year. So he's always kind of, I mean, there's nobody better at business than Brock Lesnar in wrestling. There's just not. He knows what he's doing. He makes sure that his contracts are up. So he's got, you know, options there. But like, you're right, he's 43. If he were to fight again, I think he would do one last fight where he basically would understand that he's probably going to lose it and he's just doing it for the payday.
But he doesn't need the money. I mean, WWE is paying him multi-million dollar. I mean, what is it? They reckon it's like $10 million a year or something like that, or $12 million a year. It's a fantastic sum of money per year that he's earning.
I did love that people were tweeting me going, are you getting Brock over for a tour? And I'm like, sure. Because Brock gets paid like $1 million a match for doing 10 minutes on average. And you think that I can afford to get him for a fraction of that to do 3 hours a night?
Yeah.
And can you imagine how annoyed he would be after having to do, you know, an hour and 45 minutes of meet and greets with people?
Oh, well, he wouldn't do it. It's just not something he would do.
Then, after a wee break, he has to come on stage and be asked questions by me.
There's no chance. I mean, I've interviewed him, and yeah.
Is he a talker?
He made me work for it. He made me work for those answers. I don't really think he would be a natural sort of presence on stage. I don't think it would be his forte. I think that's a polite way of putting it. But I mean, as far as him going to AEW, I don't see anyone in AEW who he could seriously have a big match with.
I think there's two for me. I think he could have a big match with Moxley.
Well, he's already wrestled him at WrestleMania, and Lesnar just showed Moxley utter, or Dean Ambrose as he was at the time, utter apathy. He did not view him as someone who was in his league. So I think that match there would be, I don't think he would be interested in having that match. But more importantly, Kenny, you tell us the other person.
The other person I just think would be a riot is Jericho. But yeah. At the same time, I think the reason I don't think maybe, I think if you paid to do the Moxley match, I think it's a worthwhile investment because Moxley's going to be around for a while. Yeah. Whereas with Jericho, it's like, then you're getting into WrestleMania part-timer territory where you're going to, we're going to pay one guy to face another guy who is, you know, at the end of his career.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, Jericho now, I mean, I know he can do serious stuff, but I mean, he's been doing a lot of comedy lately and it's hard for me at the moment to really take him seriously. I know that's the image that he's projecting at the moment and that's the character he's currently playing and that he could U-turn on that one. But it doesn't really seem to me like that would be worth the investment to AEW. And besides, if Lesnar were to suddenly start speaking to AEW, at that moment, Vince McMahon would be on the phone. You know, he would be like, right, Brock, how much do you need? You know, well, let's get you locked in for another year or 2 years. And at that point, it would just be a negotiating ploy, just like when Lesnar suggested or implied that he might be returning to UFC. It was all about driving his price up with WWE. So you would think that AEW would be smart enough not to fall for that one. I mean, I guess they would have nothing to lose by, you know, negotiating with him or at least talking to him. But as far as any money changing hands, I just can't see that. And I'm sure AEW knows exactly what Lesnar's going to do. And if he were to do that, he would just be playing them to drive his price up with Vince. So that's where, he's going bad next year for sure.
It'll be the Edge story all over again.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, before we talk about the shows, I thought it was just worth bringing up that the word jabroni has been added to the dictionary, Finn.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Dictionary.com have added jabroni to the dictionary. And
you have the definition there, Kenny.
I do. So where was the? Of course, I'm not able to find it now. Let me just find the exact, because there's two definitions that they have. Hold on. This is great radio when I'm just typing. But I read this the other day and I thought it was just great. Okay, here we go. Jabroni, definition of jabroni. Number one is slang for a stupid, foolish, or contemptible person, aka a loser. An example would be, she always has a comeback to own the trolls and jabronis on Twitter. Or, shut your mouth, you damn jabroni. The number two meaning for it is also called enhancement talent, jobber. Professional wrestling, a wrestler whose purpose is to lose matches against headlining wrestlers in order to build up the status and fame of the headliners. For example, the man is a legend in the ring. He eats jabronis for breakfast.
Well, fantastic. Well, yeah, I've got no... You know, I couldn't add anything to that definition. As much as I would like to rewrite it and improve on it, I don't think I can.
But, he did, The Rock obviously deserves a lot of credit, as does the Iron Sheik.
Oh, of course.
Who used that. But The Rock tweeted about it. The Rock tweeted, because Dictionary had said, yes, we put jabroni in the dictionary. We assumed The Rock could smell us cooking up this update the whole time. Very clever. And The Rock responded saying, wow, very cool. Honored to have a word actually make the dictionary, making all my teachers very proud. For the record, I may have made the word jabroni famous and part of worldwide culture, but the Iron Sheik made it famous in our wild wrestling locker rooms. So
Well, that's tremendous. I mean, do you think it'll become part of like the regular lexicon? You know, may we hear it in like Holyrood or in Westminster? On the BBC News, maybe.
I would love to hear Nicola Sturgeon called Ruth Davidson a jabroni. That'd be quite something. Or Boris Johnson talking about, you know, we like Scotland, but that jabroni Nicola Sturgeon, she's be quite fun. Anyway.
I must finish this sentence I said earlier before. I'm doing really good. And the reason is this morning I finished my articles for Inside the Ropes magazine. So they were submitted, sent off. What a relief.
Happy days. Now yes. We are on the road to, because that magazine is now going to the printers, I think, as we speak.
Yes.
So it's going to be getting printed up, and I know we talked about it last week, but I mean, the reception to this has been amazing. The amount of people that have bought an issue or subscribed is tremendous. So thank you very much. And I think that if you are a long-standing Power Slam aficionado, then I think when you see what Finn's got in the first issue, you're gonna lose your shit.
Some old school stuff. That old. I mean, we're using that phrase again. But I was. I've contributed like 6.5 pages to the magazine. So I'm sure. I think people will be pleased with what we're in. But you know, as ever, the public will decide.
The public.
They are the ones who decide whether we're doing a good job or we're doing a bad job. But I'm pretty confident that you'll be pleased with what it is that we're going to be putting out there on September 17th, right, Kenny?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I actually did an interview, which is, I don't know when it's going to go up, but I did an interview with Slam Wrestling earlier on this week, promoting the magazine, which is mad because I used to read Slam Wrestling ages ago. And one of the kind of mission statements that I'd said that for me is a mission statement for the magazine that I think everybody shares is that, you know, modern wrestling is covered in a fairly bland aesthetic, and we wanted to make sure there was more of a vibrant aesthetic and more of a vibrant feel to the coverage with more long-form analysis. And I think that's what we've managed to get through the team that we've got. And I think that when you get that magazine through the door on September 17th, it's just going to jump off the page to you, all the articles. It's going to, and the person who interviewed me, Jamie, her name was, she said, what do you hope that people will do after they read Inside the Ropes magazine? And I want to ask that same question to you, Finn, but what I said was, I would like people to think after it and to go, like, do I agree with that? Do I not? Like, and just think about having read it. Because I think when you see stuff online, it's just kind of churn, churn, churn. You don't get a chance to think a lot. So for me, it's thinking, but what about you? When people read your stuff in Inside the Ropes magazine, what is it? What would you like to have them do?
Well, firstly, recommend it to their friends and to spread the good word. I when I was running Power Slam, everything I've ever written, you always try to make people think about something on a deeper level. It's our job, and I feel like, you know, I remember years ago reading something in a book, and it was about it was actually a book on the movies. And there was a particular writer, and someone said, oh, this writer had the ability to make movies matter. You know, he really is a guy who wrote about them in such depth and, you know, with such conviction that he made every film, or at least any film of, you know, any merit matter. And hopefully that's what we're going to do. And that's what we will make you think, that when you're reading Inside the Ropes magazine, wrestling matters. You know, that's our statement, that's our mission, that's our goal. And also to, you know, really provide coverage with some pep and some fizz and some pizzazz, you know, really with some personality in those words. You know, you want to feel like when those words have been written that some thought and effort and even some love has gone into those words. And that's certainly the case with everything I've written this month.
Yeah, 100%. I wrote an article as well, so I'm very happy that it's in there. And I'm very excited to see the finished product as well, and to, yes, you know, it's just going to be a very full circle moment for me personally. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Before we
making talk about wrestling matter, you know, you could put that on the cover. Wrestling matter.
I thought you were going to say making wrestling great again. I was like, maybe leave that one.
Yes.
Anyway, before we talk about Payback and Raw, I did want to briefly bring up SmackDown, the go home show from last week. Was there anything on the show that stuck out to you when they were trying to, you know, give that final build for Payback?
Well, from, obviously,
apart,
yeah.
Apart from Postman Pierce.
Yeah, obviously. Well, Postman Pierce, obviously, Roman Reigns appearing backstage. I mean, the show long storyline was that Vince McMahon had assigned Adam Pierce the task of getting Braun Strowman, The Fiend Bray Wyatt, and Roman Reigns to sign the contract for the No Holds Barred Triple Threat match for the Universal title at Payback. So he managed to obtain signatures of Strowman and Wyatt by going to the Firefly Funhouse as Postman Pierce. And then as the show went off the air, he finally went into Roman Reigns' dressing room. Reigns was being very arrogant. It wasn't being very accommodating, was he, Kenny?
No, and usually Roman Reigns is one of the most accommodating people in the locker room, so his new attitude was quite startling.
Quite, indeed, indeed. And what sort of message was he sending to the world there? You know, what sort of role model is he? You know, I mean, he's not the guy that we saw in that Hyundai advert, SummerSlam. He's not that guy anymore.
He's not the guy in the Hyundai advert.
Was it Hyundai? I think it was.
No, it's just such a funny reference.
So in the end, Adam Pearce was finally granted access to Roman Reigns' private locker room. And Reigns said, "I will be in the triple threat match. Wreck everyone and leave. That is a guarantee. And I will win back my Universal Championship that I never lost in the first place. That is not just a prediction. That's a spoiler." And then the camera panned back. And who was sat next to Roman Reigns but... shock, horror, Paul Heyman. So that was the cliffhanger when SmackDown ended.
So what do you make of this monumental pairing? This is essentially they are telling you here, Roman Reigns is now a villain. He has Paul Heyman behind him. He's going to get Heyman to do his dirty work for him. Because there are some people saying, you know, are they doing this too late? Some people are saying it's just the injection the show needed. What did you think when you saw them as a pair?
Well, it's bizarre because I remember it might have even been in 2018. We said, right, that's it, Kenny. We are officially banned. We banned ourselves from talking about the Roman Reigns heel turn, didn't we? We said, we were
talking about it every second week.
Yeah. And it was just getting rather dull because it seemed like it was never going to happen. It's like, listen, you know, when it happens, we'll talk about it then. Well, it's happened now. And we're like, where the hell did this come from? And I suppose it was, you know, there was a signpost there. It was telegraphed, I guess, at the end of SummerSlam when he returned and did act a little bit heelish. But I didn't really see that as a heel turn. I saw that just as him asserting his authority over two, you know, aggressive, you know, formidable characters. But apparently, yeah, he's now a heel, and we saw that at Payback. That was full on, you know, prototypical heel behavior at the end of the main event of Payback, as I'm sure we'll cover that shortly. But yeah, I'm still trying to digest it. It does feel like it's happened too late, almost like the Strowman Universal title win. But I mean, if WWE goes the distance with it, and I think they will, I think after title changes at SummerSlam and then at Payback, there's not going to be another Universal title change for a long time. So I think Reigns is in for the long haul as champion. I am curious to see how this plays out, and especially with Paul Heyman by his side. Never saw this one coming. You know, I mean, that was the tagline of SummerSlam, wasn't it? So, I mean, I definitely never saw this coming on SummerSlam. On SmackDown, on the post-SummerSlam SmackDown. It's good news. It's interesting because it's somewhat different. It's not the same old Roman Reigns. There's lots of different things. There's a world of possibilities here. But I'm just kind of still amazed that this happened. And I think we're going to learn a lot more this Friday on SmackDown, because presumably Bray Wyatt will have something to say about it in the Firefly Funhouse, or maybe The Fiend will confront Roman Reigns. I'm not sure. But I think we're going to get a lot more information this Friday. So, I mean, I think this Friday's SmackDown should do a good number. I think there'll be a lot of interest in it, just to hear what Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman have to say about what happened at Payback. So, yeah, they've got my attention, Kenny. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think it's a real shot in the arm they needed, because I think when Roman came back, the issue would be that if Roman came back and did the same thing that he had done before, he would maybe get cheered for like a month, and then we'd be in the same position that we always end up being in. So yeah. The fact that he's here and he's got a different attitude, and he's, you know, he responded to a fan on Twitter who'd said something about, did you see this about the shoving, he's getting shoved down their throats kind of thing?
Yes, I saw it, yeah.
And I'm just going to read the tweet actually, because somebody had basically said, "Oh, you know, you're just getting shoved down fans' throats all the time." And then Roman Reigns responded and said, "Yeah." So Ed Morgan had said, "Roman being forced down people's throats again, such an overrated performer. The belt has changed hands so many times, it just has no prestige. Rubbish." And then Roman said, "Only reason I'm down your throat is because you keep your mouth open. I'm the best performer of this generation, period, and the title is finally in the right hands for it to hold true value." So let's move on to Payback, where it all happens. So we open Payback with Apollo Crews against Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship, and Lashley manages to win the title from Apollo Crews in 9 minutes and 30 seconds. Was this the right decision to put the belt on Lashley?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it seemed like the Hurt Business was kind of floundering. I think they needed a win here, and Lashley is, you know, in the pecking order, certainly above Apollo Crews. I'm not really sure where it leaves Crews, though. I mean, there's a guy who's been up and down this year. I mean, talk about stop-start booking. You know, just when you think, oh, can we get behind Apollo Crews? Not that I really was, and I don't think you were either. He loses the title to Bobby Lashley, so he's kind of a jabroni again. Look that one up, kids. So, I mean, it feels like certainly a huge step back for Crews, but, I mean, I think the right decision for Lashley. I don't know what's going to happen with Apollo Crews. I mean, he's kind of got this edge, but they don't really seem to, they haven't fleshed that out yet. They haven't really pushed that forward, and he loses. And it was like a submission loss as well. So, I mean, Lashley won convincingly. Crews doesn't have any excuses for this defeat. This was, you know, Lashley dominant, wins the title. I mean, Crews attacked Lashley after the match. So obviously the feud's continuing. We saw that on Raw. But I don't really see where Crews goes next from here. But yeah, I think it was the right decision for Lashley and the Hurt Business.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Apollo Crews, he has been marginally more interesting as champion, but still, it's just not. It's not popping off the page. It's not. You know, I'm not running it to buy my Apollo Crews action figure. So let's move on to the thing is, I'm more interested. I never thought I'd say this. I'm more interested right now in Cedric Alexander than I am in Apollo Crews.
Yeah.
And that's a low bar. It's a low bar for me to be at. But
I mean, Crews, Cedric, and Ricochet, so slick in the ring. So good. In great shape. You know, they look like stars, or at least sort of mid-card stars. And like, but there's that huge piece of the jigsaw puzzle is missing for them to become stars. And for them to progress beyond their current station, their current status in WWE. And I'm sure it can be done. I always, you know, you always look back at Bayley and think, oh, Bayley's a lost cause. And then she develops this character and you're like, wow, that's the missing piece. That's the X factor that's transformed her from an annoyance, you know, to a barrel of laughs and to somebody that we can genuinely look forward to seeing each week. And, you know, you've got to imagine that between Crews, Cedric and Ricochet, one of those three has star qualities and could be somebody in this company, but they're not showing it at the moment. And, you know, you just want that X factor to arrive so these guys can soar and become contributors rather than passengers on the good ship WWE.
We also saw, probably not a lot to say about this, but Big E got a win over Sheamus in about 12 and a half minutes. Big E was actually more interesting on talking smack again this past weekend when he was kind of hammering home, you know, his chat about the doubters and the people who've said stuff about him. And I think the stuff that he's talking about on talking smack is interesting because, you know, he's talking to people like us who've kind of said we want to see more from him. And by him at least explaining why he's the way he is more interesting than just what felt like same old.
Yeah. I mean, it was a well-received match. I mean, no one's ever doubted Big E's talent in the ring. I mean, you know, he connects with the audience. I mean, the Thunderdome people on the LED boards really enjoyed this match. They were making a lot of noise. You know, I thought Sheamus played his part well, put Big E over, really sold the significance of the loss afterwards as if he had been, you know, humbled by Big E and that Big E was the better man and that there was nothing in it really. And in terms of winning and losing, it was Big E's night and Sheamus was the clear loser here. But I still don't really see how this takes Big E any closer to the top of the card. You know, he's still that same guy, you know, funny guy who's okay. He's somebody that the crowd enjoys as a mid-card player, but I don't see how this takes him, as Miz said, how does this put him in the Universal title picture? You know, maybe Roman Reigns as Universal champion, maybe, you know, maybe that's part of the reason why Roman Reigns has done this turn so he can work with people like Big E. I still don't see Big E as a top guy. He's still that same guy. And as long as he plays his character, he'll always be that guy to me.
Yeah, I think for me, I need to see him in a program. I need to see him in a feud. I need to see what he's going to be like. Because right now, we're not really seeing him in a program yet. We're seeing him fight people and stuff, but, you know, we want to see more. So I want to see where he is when he gets into a feud with somebody. We also saw Matt Riddle against Ken Corbin. Matt Riddle got the win, but, I mean, I don't know if I can think of, in recent memory, a win that made me feel less excited about the winner.
Yeah. And then, sadly, afterwards, Corbin attacked Riddle backstage and left Riddle lying in a, you know, surrounded by apples, lemons, and limes. I mean, that good fruit just gone to waste. So, I mean, it appears that this feud is going to continue. I don't think anyone, I know I don't need to see Riddle versus Corbin again. And I think I think you would echo those sentiments, Kenny.
I do not want to see it so much that I almost would like to see one more Hornswoggle versus Chavo Guerrero match more. And that's a series that I banished out of my mind in 2009. We old school reference for everybody.
Old school. This is the old school podcast. Let's change the name of it. Should probably best not to do that since, well, we'll talk about that thing, the reason why we can't do that next week. We'll talk about it then.
Yeah, so also then we had Sasha and Bayley defend the women's tag titles against Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax, the story of the two challengers who do not get along. And the two challengers ended up winning the tag team titles, Shayna and Nia Jax, with a sensational finish of Shayna Baszler having both of the opponents in submission moves and Bayley tapping out to the Kira for the clutch. Bayley and Sasha dejected on the floor while Baszler and Jax, I say they celebrate, Nia Jax is celebrating and Shayna Baszler's kind of like torn between being happy that she's a champion and that she has to team with Nia Jax. What did you make of the match and the finish?
I enjoyed the match. I mean, I thought Bayley and Sasha were a lot of fun here. I thought the really good heels, obviously a tremendous team. It's going to be a shame when they split, but I mean, it's going to have to happen at some point fairly soon, I would think, given their recent run of misfortune. So they worked over Nia, and I thought everyone played their part very well here. I was amused earlier in the show when we saw Nia and she was wearing the Nobody Meaner Than Tamina top. You know, so, I mean, she's still keeping Tamina's name out there, Nia Jax. That's a good friend.
I've got that T-shirt pre-ordered on Euroshop. I don't really.
So, I mean, yeah, so Nia and Shayna, I mean, there was a few problems between them, but in the end, they did work together. Not harmoniously, but, I mean, they managed to put it together and operate as a functional team. And as you said, Baszler forced Bayley to tap out. She had submission holds on both Bayley and Banks at the end. It was Bayley who tapped. To me, it felt like the right result because Sasha and Bayley are heading for Splitsville. I mean, I'm not sure when, but it's coming soon, surely. And I think it's more interesting with, you know, Nia and Shayna as tag team champions and seeing what they can do with the belts. I think Sasha and Bayley had really peaked as tag team champions. And their story doesn't require them to be champs anymore. So, and also, you know, besides, had Shayna and Nia lost here, they probably wouldn't have teamed again. So the fact that they're champs means that their story as a unit is now just getting going. So I like the booking. I like the way it was laid out. And I like the way that it created, you know, storyline advancements for both Bayley and Banks and for Nia and Shayna. And obviously people on Raw as well, as we've seen with, you know, the Liv Tyler and, not Liv Tyler, Liv
Morgan.
Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott winning the match over the Iconics on Raw, and they're going to be facing Nia and Shayna, presumably a clash of champions. So, yeah, lots happening as a result of this outcome. So, yes, big fan of this.
The biggest shock on the show, I think, was the Keith Lee Randy Orton match, which, you know, it was a perfectly fine 6.5 minute match. There's not really much to write about it, but Keith Lee wins clean with the Spirit Bomb over Randy Orton. Were you surprised that Keith Lee got such a decisive win over Randy Orton?
Well, I think people were listening to... I think WWE was listening to the response of the match on Raw, and people felt, well, you know, they've kind of ruined Keith Lee in the first night. I mean, that was catastrophizing, you know, with Drew running in on the match. And, you know, that was just people nitpicking and finding fault with WWE. You know, and obviously I've done that in the past and will do that in the future. But I felt that was unfair. But maybe WWE was listening to that and thinking, you know what, we need to right that wrong. You know, we need to put out a statement of intent here that we are absolutely behind Keith Lee. And boy, did they do that here in this match, which, as you said, lasted fewer than 7 minutes. And Lee pinned Orton with a Spirit Bomb. You know, it was totally clean. I mean, Orton was stunned afterwards at ringside, kind of a little bit like Sheamus, you know, was sat there just like, what happened? You know, what hit me? You know, what went wrong? So, I mean, it was the right decision for Lee. And again, you know, really good storytelling by WWE with Lee scoring the win here. And then Orton, as we'll talk shortly, Orton, then having the big win on Raw. So, you know, he, in a sense, lost nothing here because he's going to be facing Drew at Clash of Champions. But Lee has got this huge win on his curriculum vitae. And yeah, good for him. I mean, he must have left Payback thinking, yeah, I'm going to be all right. I think I'm going to be all right anyway. So, yeah.
And sometimes you need to do, I mean, I think the thing with Keith Lee was he did turn up on Raw with different music, with...
Yeah.
Slightly shitter gear.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a, I think, you know, people were concerned because they've seen the track record, but they, to give WWE credit, they pulled out exactly what they needed to pull out here, which was Keith Lee getting a big win. And, you know, if Randy Orton does beat Drew McIntyre, then he has a challenger ready to go.
Absolutely. I mean, this is just basic old school booking, you know, just using a star to shine a new star. And, you know, this sort of thing should happen more often. And it happened here, and that's all that matters this week.
We also got a tag match with Rey Mysterio and Son Dominic taking on Seth Rollins and Murphy. And the Mysterios got a babyface victory in the match when Dom ended up hitting both of his dad's finishers with a 619 and a frog splash on Murphy. Rollins was pissed, but it was nice to see the babyfaces getting a win here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, another uplifting result, another heartening outcome. You know, you think, wow, WWE, yeah, well, perhaps Vince hasn't lost it. You know, perhaps Vince, you know, still has instincts, not just habits. Perhaps he does know what he's doing. And isn't it funny how when WWE puts on a show like this, where they get it right, you know, you don't read that many comments from people saying, wow, Vince really pulled it together there. I was wrong about him. You know, maybe he's not, you know, ready for the knacker's yard yet. You very rarely hear those comments or read those comments online, do you, Kenny?
You don't. But it's, you know, it's just like, I very rarely, rarely hear anybody say anything negative about you because they're fizzing with positivity. Whereas with Vince, he unfortunately has the opposite, where people are bubbling with animosity towards him.
Yeah, I mean, I was amused by the outcome. I mean, it was just like, Seth Rollins, he was holding on to, who was Seth Rollins holding on to? He was holding on to Rey Mysterio.
He was holding on to Rey.
Rey Mysterio, and then he instructed Murphy, who was on the apron, to kick Rey Mysterio in the head. And instead, Rey ducked and Murphy accidentally kicked Seth, and then that led to the finish. with Ray taking out Seth and then Dominic taking out Murphy and pinning Murphy for the win. Just goes to show, Kenny, that you should never loudly call spots. It backfires.
It's very true. That's why I don't call spots.
But I really enjoy this match and really nice to see the Mysterios get a win. It was the right time. And quite interesting afterwards that Rollins was livid with Murphy and like left without him, glaring at him, walked off, and Murphy's there in the bad books, and so he should be. I mean, this is again one of those little details that we've complained about in the past. Wins and losses should matter, and to Rollins this loss did matter. He was angry about it and he communicated that to Murphy for screwing up and losing. So again, just all, you know, really good sort of in-depth sort of booking where you're trying to make the whole process of what they're doing meaningful, you know, making wrestling matter. That's WWE's new motto.
And your new t-shirt by the sounds of it. It was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it. It was really nice to see Ray and Dominic get the win here. And then it brought us to the main event, which was The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, the Universal title. Roman had still not signed the contract at this point. Heyman earlier in the show had said that, you know, he will. The Fiend and Strowman fight around the ring and up the ramp and everywhere in between. And then the ring collapses on a superplex with Charles Robinson taking a tremendous bump. That brings out Roman.
No, the ring imploded. It didn't collapse. Imploded. Michael Cole told us that at least twice.
That happened to the ring, and then it was straight into Roman Reigns coming out. He signed the contract on the ramp, and as he signed the contract on the ramp, he came down and he tried to beat the Fiend, couldn't beat the Fiend, and then he eventually got the spear on Strowman, won the match, won the Universal title. I think that what we learned from this match is that Braun Strowman and the Fiend do not have great chemistry together, and that Roman Reigns saved the day.
Yeah, I mean, they did lots of different things. They were battling around ringside. They used that big, that big hammer that I think Fiend unveiled. Was it Hell in a Cell last year? I think that was the first time we saw that hammer. Oh, no, maybe we saw it in the Funhouse prior to that. I think we did, actually. So they were, like, nailing each other with ring steps, battling all over the place. I mean, they had all the add-ons and all the props, you know, for the shortcuts and the diversions. But you're right, yeah, it wasn't that amazing. They wrestled for almost, I think it was roughly 10 minutes. Then they did the superplex spot. The ring collapsed. Then Reigns came out on stage, signed the contract, covered the Fiend, who kicked out. Then he covered Braun, who kicked out. Fiend got the mandible claw on Reigns. Reigns at this point came across as a total heel when he nailed Fiend, kicked Fiend in the balls. And then Reigns ended up spearing Braun and pinning him to capture the Universal title. And Reigns posed with the title and Heyman on the stage as the show went off the air. So definitely a heel performance here from Roman Reigns. Left no doubt at all over where he stands right now. He is a villain. He's a bad guy for sure.
And I guess, like you said earlier, it's a good hook for Friday on SmackDown to see where things go. Does The Fiend stick around that picture? Where does Braun Strowman sit? What does Roman Reigns do? So, I'm into the Heyman and Reigns dynamic. So we'll see where it goes.
I should also mention that Alexa Bliss was shown backstage watching the match on the screen. So, I mean, you know, that storyline is continuing with her and The Fiend. So, I mean, that's an additional layer to it. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I think actually it was on SmackDown, wasn't it, that Alexa kind of turned heel on Nikki when she smashed the coffee mug that she'd given to Nikki. It was the first present that Alexa had given to Nikki, and she heelishly smashed it on the ground.
She did, yeah. And we should mention, I actually thought the Payback was... I enjoyed Payback more than I enjoyed SummerSlam, and I enjoyed SummerSlam. So I thought they did well.
Yeah, I mean, I can... I can't really find fault with it. I mean, I thought it was a very well-balanced show. I think it did everything it set out to. I think it was very productive, and it did a lot for a lot of different people. So, yeah, thumbs up from me.
The next night on Raw, we basically were kind of getting the where are things going to go in the WWE title picture. Now, Rey Mysterio has got a torn tricep, so he's going to be out for a couple of months, which is Not great for him, but he was replaced in his... Because basically they announced three matches that the three winners would go into a triple threat main event, and the winner would face Drew McIntyre at Clash of Champions. So it was supposed to be Rey Mysterio, Seth Rollins, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, and Keith Lee, Dolph Ziggler. Dolph fucking Ziggler. For a spot in the triple threat match, but Rey was replaced by Dominic. So we got Seth beating Dominic, we got Randy Orton beating Kevin Owens with some help from Aleister Black, and Keith Lee beating Dolph Ziggler, thank God. To lead us to the main event where Randy Orton RKO'd and pinned Seth Rollins, so Orton goes on to face Drew McIntyre. It was a pretty clear kind of, I don't think it was the most exciting thing in the world, but it was a pretty decent through thread for the show, I thought, the three matches to lead to the triple threat.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, it was all very clear and easy to understand, and the right people won the qualifying matches. I thought Dominic stepped up and did well in the match with Rollins. Of course, he really had to lose. I mean, it was Rollins, Orton and Keith Lee in the main event. You wouldn't want to put Dominic Mysterio in this match because it just wouldn't have made any sense. And it really needed to be, from the psychology standpoint, two heels, Orton and Rollins, versus one babyface, Lee. And Orton and Rollins were kind of teaming up, and then they weren't teaming up. And as you say, Orton ended up pinning Rollins after Lee had hit the spirit bomb. Rollins was wiped out by the spirit bomb. Lee was about to pin him, but Orton wiped out Lee with the RKO. And then Orton scored the pin on Rollins. So it was Keith Lee's devastating finisher that took Rollins down. And of course, it was Orton who was the almost like the ultimate opportunist. He exploited that for his benefit. So, and Orton drew McIntyre. Definitely feels like the right main event for Clash of Champions. I mean, the SummerSlam match didn't have that ring of finality to it in the way that it ended, with McIntyre scoring the pin with almost like a fluke backslide that he used for the pin rather than the Claymore. So it was clear that there was going to be a rematch between them. And then obviously that was reinforced on Raw the following night when Orton took McIntyre out with the three punts, and then McIntyre ended up going to hospital. We haven't seen him since. So, makes sense to me, Orton versus McIntyre. Kind of feels like this is going to be Orton's night. I stand corrected. I'm glad that McIntyre retained the title at SummerSlam. That was obviously the right decision. And I think, Orton, if he does win the title at Clash of Champions, that would seem, certainly feels like the right time for him to win. And as you said earlier, he's got a natural first opponent in Keith Lee. And then obviously you've got Keith Lee and McIntyre as well, and lots of different things that can be done there.
Elsewhere on the show, we saw that Mickie James wants to try and face Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship. So she ended up in a match with Lana, which she won. How would you describe the match with Mickie James and Lana?
Not much happened in it, which I'm not complaining about. Lana wasn't asked to do much, which is good because she really can't. Can I just say that Mickie James's Mick kick, that kick is the worst kick in wrestling. It looks so awful. You would have to be stoned out of your brain not to be able to duck it. I mean, you just would have to be, because it just takes forever when she presses ignition and, throws the kick, it takes so long for it to hit its target. What was Lana doing standing there? I mean, surely she could have ducked that kick. I mean, you're right all along about Lana. She's just not really cut out for this wrestling game, is she? If she couldn't duck that kick from Mickie James. So, I mean, I'm not really looking forward to this match. I mean, Mickie James did have, to me, Mickie James has had very few good matches in her career. But I've got to say that when she returned, she had that takeover match with Asuka. I thought that was a really good match. That was a few years ago now, mind you. But I mean, if they can, if lightning can strike twice and they can capture at least the spirit of that, then yeah, it'll be worth watching. I mean, I'm not sure if they will be able to, or if they'll be allowed to, more to the point, because that was obviously an NXT match when NXT was in a different place. But I mean, yeah, Mickie James, it's not a long-term thing. Surely it's not going to be a Clash of Champions match, although maybe it will be. Maybe it will be James versus Asuka at Clash of Champions. I mean, they haven't really got anyone else lined up for Asuka, have they?
Not if Shayna and Nia are the tag champs for now. So I guess we'll see.
We did have a confrontation backstage earlier between Asuka and Shayna and Nia, but you're right, they're going to be defending the title against Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott at Clash of Champions, one assumes, after their historic victory over the Iconics, Kenny.
I mean, I'm just struggling to really put into words how upset I am that Billy Kay will no longer be wrestling on a regular basis. But just like I'm going to have to deal with No Big Show Show, I will deal with this with a similar level of sort of, you know, grin and bear it. But Peyton Royce...
determination will see you through. So yeah, so the Iconics faced Liv and Ruby. The stipulation was, and this came from out of nowhere, where did this come from? The winning team would receive a match with Nia and Shayna for the women's tag team title, and the losing team would have to disband. And it wasn't exactly an epic collision, was it, between Ruby and Liv and Billy and Peyton? And Riott ended up pinning Billy Kay. And afterwards, Kay and Royce seemed kind of upset, but almost comically so. I mean, I know everything they did was a bit of a joke. But what did occur to me, right, was that the Iconics have got lots of matching outfits, like lots and lots of matching outfits, which are now redundant. I mean, and this means that presumably, if they're going to continue wrestling, which I'm assuming they will, they'll have to invest in new gear. I mean, have you ever considered that, Kenny? The amount of money this is going to cost Billy Kay and Peyton Royce as a result of this loss?
We could start a GoFundMe for them. Maybe that would help. You don't get paid a lot in the mid card.
No, I mean, this isn't the lipstick podcast, but my God, a makeup podcast. But my God, Billy and Peyton, that red lipstick was a bit overpowering.
It was a lot. I mean, look, I think long term this is going to be good for Peyton Royce because she actually is okay in the ring. It's going to be difficult for Billy Kay. I think they're probably going to put her. I mean, I think her future definitely should be as a mouthpiece.
Yeah,
because she's so charismatic. She's so funny. She's just not a good wrestler.
She's not, and she's been doing this for a long time now. And if she was going to get the hang of it, if she was going to really improve, I think it would have happened by now. Interestingly, in this match, Liv and Ruby had matching outfits. That was a bit of a tip-off of the outcome, I felt.
Yeah, they're back on the same page, and the Iconics are no more.
And later on in the show, Peyton and Billy ended up going to Raw Underground, and Peyton kind of threw Billy under the bus, threw her into the ring, and then Jessamine Duke hit her with this really crappy-looking kick, and Billy fell down.
We always ask, how did you feel about this week's Raw Underground?
It was all right. I mean, because I don't think it's ever going to really amount to anything, it doesn't bother me anymore. At first, I was thinking, well, what's this going to be? And is it really going to make a difference? And I started overanalyzing it, you know, which we do on this podcast. I started overanalyzing it a little bit. And I think it's just a little diversion. It's a little distraction. It's just a small piece of the show that passes quickly, and then we get back to the proper business, which is what goes on in the Thunderdome. So, you know, I'm not annoyed or calling for the cancellation of Raw Underground anymore. I mean, if it's part Raw for the foreseeable future, hey, I've got no objections. I don't really see it as a liability. I don't think it really contributes anything to the program, but I don't think it's counterproductive either. So, and it's an excuse for, I mean, Titus O'Neil went in there and kicked ass.
You know, got to give him something to do.
I mean, who knew Titus O'Neil was such a tough guy?
We should also mention on Raw, during the Street Profits and Andrade and Angel Garza, Retribution got involved. Retribution, apparently, as per PW Insider, are going to be on Raw only. So, as well as not visiting pay-per-views to Destruct, they'll now only be Destructing on Monday nights. I mean, it's hard to think of a worse booked faction before they've unveiled than this one. It is garbage.
I mean, and also, each time they turn up, you think, Is that the ninjas? Oh, no, it's Retribution. Oh, it's not the ninjas, it's Retribution. I mean, why? They just give them some different outfits. And we still don't know what the goal is. Presumably, it's revenge. I mean, you know, Retribution, the clue's in the title. But, I mean, they still haven't said anything yet. And we don't know what their demands or goals are. Or, I mean, I think, did I say last week, oh, surely this week they'll say what they're all about and why they're there and, you know, what they're trying to do and, you know, who's upset them in the past and how this score that they want to settle. And no one's said anything yet. So, I mean, I think it can still work. I mean, it can still succeed on some level. But, I mean, each week goes by, I think interest in the act diminishes because we've seen it all before now. It's, you know, it's diminishing returns. It's, you know, it's repetition. We've been here before. So they need to just unmask and just tell us why they're there, what they're all about and what they're going to do. This just needs to happen like next week. Maybe the writing team hasn't worked out yet, you know, what their goal is, you know, why they're doing these things. Maybe that's the reason why they haven't announced what their objective is yet, because WWE hasn't decided on what it is.
It's a shame that, you know, they're doing a lot of good stuff with, you know, Roman's heel turn and the Keith Lee thing. It's just like the Retribution thing is just such a bad part of it. Like every week it's less interesting, it makes less sense. And but look, you know, maybe when they take their masks off, there can be some promo that can explain it that will somehow make this worthwhile. I'm doubtful, but I'm willing to give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, maybe what I want to know as well is why the lights flicker before they come out. You know, is there someone backstage, you know, somebody that backstage flickering the lights or, you know, like pulling the plug out, put the plug back in? I mean, what's going on?
I
got the visions of the whole of Raw being like operated by one plug socket. You know? But I mean, it's like, why does that happen? And that alerted. Because they ran out during the Street Profits and versus Andrade and Angel Garza tornado match. And when the lights flickered, Garza ran backstage. He ran backstage with Debbie Burnett, that's her name, and sort of took her to safety. And then backstage, when Retribution burst through the fire doors, he abandoned her and ran off. I mean, what a coward. You know, I mean, he's no gent, is he?
Not like ours. We would have helped out.
Of course we would. I mean, at least Demi was smart enough to, you know, do a runner herself, although she did stand there for a while. I'm not quite sure why. And, also on the show, Adam Pearce had told these security guys that if Retribution were to gain access to Raw Underground again, then they would be fired. So presumably all those security guards are now on the unemployment line.
We'll have to stay tuned and see where it goes.
There's a cliffhanger for you.
I know. God, can you imagine? But yeah, Raw was okay. It was a decent enough follow-up, but there's been a lot of wrestling, so and the build Clash of Champions will begin. But anyway, that is it for us here in the main podcast. We will be back with an overrun over on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes for more bonus content. As new, this is a shoot, brother, went up yesterday with Finn, with some wacky quotes from wrestling personalities past and present. If any of you any plugs for us today?
No plugs, Kenny. No plugs.
The plug that we should be giving is InsideTheRopesMagazine.com, where you can get order the first issue today, or you can get a subscription, or you can revisit that site on September 17th, where you can get the digital copy straight away downloaded and check out issue one. So we hope that you will join us there. That's it. I hope you enjoy your week, Finn, whatever you've got planned. DIY, I assume, of some kind.
Oh, I'm not really sure, probably. Oh, no, that's not true. I'm going on an all-day session with a couple of the fellas on Saturday, so I'm looking forward to that.
Quite right. You deserve it. A couple of Jaeger bombs, you'll be causing havoc in Lancashire.
Oh, yeah. Any more of those, I'll be causing havoc.
So thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.